Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Steve Rendell, here with Peter Hart. This week on Counterspin, the Senate Intelligence Committee report found that intelligence about Iraq's weapons programs was severely flawed. But is there more to this story than what we've been reading and hearing from the press corps? We'll ask former CIA analyst Ray McGovern what he thinks of the media's handling of the intelligence debacle. Also this week, we'll speak with Robert Greenwald, the producer of Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, the new film that takes on the Fox News Channel for its conservative, Republican, and pro-White House bias. All that's coming up, but first we'll take a look back at the week's press.
After John Kerry chose North Carolina Senator John Edwards as his running mate, the media was full of talk about Edwards' sunny optimism and good looks. But some thought there could be a problem. Edwards was once a trial lawyer. The Republicans called that a big liability, an assertion that was quickly echoed throughout the media. ABC's Kate Snow explained that, quote, "Edwards is, in some ways, an easy target. Business groups say they plan to work harder than ever to beat up on Edwards, who was once one of the most successful trial lawyers in the country." Close quote. Over on NBC Nightly News, Andrea Mitchell explained some of Edwards' quote-unquote perceived negatives, one of which was that he was, quote, "a trial lawyer who could be caricatured as an ambulance chaser." Close quote. ABC's Linda Douglas added, quote, "Edwards' strength may also be his weakness. His silver tongue and his ability to connect with audiences all come from his years as a trial lawyer." Close quote. Now, one might think that effective public speaking skills might actually work in a candidate's favor. Douglas adds that Republicans, quote, "say America needs a leader to fight the war on terror, not a lawyer. You will hear that word lawyer a lot," close quote. That may be true, but that's largely up to the press corps. But the bigger question is this: do people really dislike the fact that Edwards was once a lawyer? That doesn't seem to be the case. A Gallup poll found a clear majority thought Edwards' legal experience was actually a plus. A Time magazine poll found the same. So the question for the media is simple: is Edwards' legal background really a weakness, or is it just more spin from the Bush-Cheney campaign?
A car bomb in Baghdad killed at least 10 people on July 14th, while to the north of the Iraqi capital, insurgents assassinated the governor of Nineveh on the same day. This was all reported in the July 15th edition of the New York Times, which said the violence had interrupted a period of calm in Iraq that had held since the so-called handover of sovereignty on June 28th. The Times' lead story began, quote, "A tentative calm that had prevailed since Iraq regained formal sovereignty 2 weeks ago was shattered Wednesday," close quote. Elsewhere, the paper referred to the supposed lull in violence as a relative calm. As much as certain officials might like us to believe that things are going swell in Iraq since the supposed transfer of power, the Times story just isn't true. The period between the handover and July 14th, some 16 days, featured several violent days, including 2 days, July 11th and July 8th, on which a total of 8 American soldiers lost their lives. A July 9th Times headline read, "Five GIs killed in attack. Philippines bars Iraq trips." While reports on Iraqi casualties are harder to find, the paper also carried stories of attacks targeting them. A July 2nd Times story, that's 4 days after the so-called transfer, carried the headline, "Undeterred, insurgents keep up deadly attacks across Iraq." That doesn't sound like relative calm to us, but perhaps Times reporters aren't required to know what their paper has been reporting, not even apparently about events that occur on their own assigned beats.
On July 12th, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough laid out his case against what he called the media's double standards. He pointed to a New York Times editorial that called for Dick Cheney to release his medical records. And Scarborough asked, quote, "What about John Kerry's refusal to release his wealthy wife's tax returns?" Close quote. Well, there was no editorial on that topic, he told his viewers. In fact, the Times did publish an editorial on April 22nd, calling for Hines Kerry to make those returns public, as did the Washington Post and a handful of other newspapers. It's also worth noting that in the Times editorial calling for Cheney to release his medical records, it also calls for Kerry to release all of his. Scarborough pointed next to the Chicago Tribune's push to unseal Republican Senate candidate Jack Ryan's divorce records. When those details were made public, Ryan dropped out of the race. So Scarborough wondered, what about John Kerry's divorce records? He already knew the answer, quote, "I guess the Tribune's right to know doesn't apply to John Kerry," close quote. Besides the fact that it was Ryan's Republican primary opponents who first made an issue of his divorce records, the reason the media aren't pressing to open Kerry's divorce records is not because of some double standard. It's because they were never sealed to begin with. To close his case, Scarborough asks why the media haven't pushed Kerry to release footage of the anti-Bush comments made by Whoopi Goldberg and other celebrities at a recent Kerry fundraiser. Scarborough said, quote, "We should see the New York Times demanding that videotape on the editorial page," close quote. But that's hardly a disclosure issue. The comments were already widely reported in the media. So what was that again about media double standards?
CNN's Wolf Blitzer demonstrated some critical journalism and some not-so-critical journalism on July 12th. Early in the day, Blitzer corrected Republican Senator John Cornyn when Cornyn recycled the false but popular idea that Saddam Hussein had, as Cornyn put it, quote, "chased UN weapons inspectors out in 1998," close quote. Blitzer followed the comment by saying politely but pointedly, quote, "I'll just correct you on one point, Senator Cornyn. In 1998, the inspectors left after the U.S. made it clear it was about to launch airstrikes against targets in Iraq," close quote. That was refreshing. Unfortunately, Blitzer seemed to lose his conscientiousness later that day when he was speaking with National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. Rice, too, put forward a variant of the fallacious claim, adding even another layer of falseness by saying that Bill Clinton, quote, "launched military strikes in 1998 because Saddam refused to let inspectors in," close quote. Blitzer did remind Rice that there had been inspectors in Iraq before the war, meaning the current war, but he didn't address her completely incorrect claim about the situation in 1998. It's hard to believe that Blitzer had forgotten information he knew just a few hours earlier. It seems more likely, unfortunately, that his willingness to counter false assertions from officials fluctuates according to the official's rank.
And finally, Sesame Street used to have a little feature called "One of These Things Doesn't Belong Here." It was hard not to be reminded of that reading the July 11th election piece by the New York Times' Robin Toner. In a passage about how biography counts in politics, Toner offered the following snapshot of some key political figures. See if you can spot the different one. Quote, "George Bush speaks the language of evangelical, conservative, family values-oriented America. John Edwards comes from the same Southern tradition that produced Bill Clinton, a master at connecting across lines of class and race. And Mr. Kerry, for his part, is trying to break out of the biographical stereotype Republicans are so eager to preserve, aloof, elite, affluent, liberal Northeasterner," close quote. Get it? It's kind of hard not to.
Thanks, Peter. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch group Fair. Fair also publishes a magazine called Extra. I'll be giving subscription information for Extra later on in the show.
The Senate Intelligence Committee issued a report about the CIA's intelligence on Iraq on July 9th. The headlines told a story of a major series of failures by the intelligence community, and also claimed that the Bush administration did not apparently pressure the agency to skew its work in order to make the case for war. So are the media reports getting the story right? And what other questions should we be asking? We're joined now by Ray McGovern. He's a 27-year veteran CIA analyst and co-founder of the group Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Ray McGovern, welcome to Counterspin.
Glad to be with you.
In a recent column about the Senate report, you wrote that some outlets were spinning the report just the way the administration might like, emphasizing that this flawed intelligence led us to war. What's wrong with that, do you think?
Well, nothing other than it's wrong, other than it's inaccurate. The spin is designed to exculpate the president and his chief advisors. The thrust is, CIA made me do it. We've had a debacle in Iraq, which is far from over. Somebody's got to take the blame, and what the president and his advisors have decided is, well, we'll blame intelligence for it. Now, they had rich material to work with because the intelligence performance was atrocious. I've never seen it so bad. It was politicized, but it was also amateurish. It was just terrible. And for those veteran intelligence professionals such as we who are reading through that 500-page report over the weekend, it was very painful reading indeed. Now, the main point, having said all this, is that the intelligence, bad as it was, didn't matter. Now, that's a big shock, right? Didn't matter. Why would I say that? Well, I'd say that because the decision to make war in Iraq predated any intelligence by a good 5 to 6 months at least. In other words, the decision to make war in Iraq occurred at the latest in the spring of 2002. There was no intelligence to justify that. And the intelligence was only given a chance to pronounce itself when the administration realized that they really should try to get Congress on board. And that's September of 2002. And it was only then that the administration commissioned a national intelligence estimate, which was prepared in record time, which was deliberately fashioned to correspond with what Cheney had just said in his major speech of August 26th, and which was wrong in every key respect. It was wrong, and it was terrible intelligence, but it did the job. What job? It deceived. It deceived our elected representatives in the Congress into forfeiting their power under the Constitution to declare war, forfeiting that and giving it to the executive. There are two things wrong here. One is the debacle in intelligence. The other, more serious one, is the constitutional crisis where one branch of our government, over an extended period of time, incredibly cynically usurped the prerogative of the other. That is, the executive took the power of Congress by deceiving it into thinking that it was necessary to wage a war which everyone recognizes now to have been unnecessary and unprovoked.
Now, the Senate report also seems to give the White House a victory in one key area. It concludes that there was no evidence to suggest that there was political pressure on the intelligence analyst to come up with information that would help make the case for war. This flies in the face of a lot of newspaper reports before this that suggested there was such pressure. This conclusion has been emphasized and sort of touted by conservative pundits like Bill O'Reilly at Fox News. What do you make of the Senate's verdict on this?
Well, it's very disingenuous. You know, if you believe that, then I have a bridge up in Brooklyn that I'd very much like to offer to sell you. Even the portion of the document itself, which bends over backwards to say, oh, and by the way, there was no political pressure at all. There wasn't any political pressure, and it protests too much. The reality is that there was all kinds of political pressure. Dick Cheney, the vice president, shows up at CIA headquarters. People say, they ask me, is that unusual? No, that's not unusual. It's unprecedented. Never did a sitting vice president, come to visit the Central Intelligence Agency on a working visit during the 27 years I was there. And he was there some 10 times, okay? He was helping the analysis come up with the, quote, correct conclusions. So that much is clear. What happened here is the Democrats saw their interests to be served by getting the report out before the election. And the Republican chair, Pat Roberts, who's really a Republican stalwart taking his instructions from the White House, decided that if he pressed and held successfully for the Democrats to say, oh, no, there wasn't any pressure, then it would be okay to release the report, because then the administration can say, well, you know, we were the victims of bad intelligence and we had nothing to do with it. We didn't pressure anybody. They just gave us really bad intelligence. So that was the compromise that was struck. The Democrats making a calculated decision that somebody's going to ask, well, you know, where is the buck supposed to stop here? Can you really blame this all on intelligence, or were there major policy failures as well? And the Democrats are counting on the American people to be wise enough and not to be fooled all the time.
And finally, there's sort of a question here about how political pressure really works. And you tell a story in your column about your involvement in the Gulf of Tonkin. It's a story that offers both a chance to see how pressure like this works and lets us know that certainly this is not unprecedented. Tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Well, let me, instead of that, tell you what happened this time. It's very graphic, and it's very immediate in everybody's consciousness. This source, who was ironically called Curveball, the defector, who was the only source, really, for this tall tale about mobile biological weapons labs. He was seen by just one American debriefer. And when that one American debriefer saw what was in Colin Powell's speech on the 5th of February of last year, he almost lost it. He said, "My God, he can't say that. That's not been verified. This guy is a drunkard and a liar." And he wrote an email to his boss saying, we better get to Powell right away and tell him what this is really like. And his boss wrote back, and this is the classic, and he said, "Look, there's going to be a war whatever you do. If you think that Colin Powell and the rest of them are interested in whether Curveball is telling the truth or not, you're sadly mistaken. Take it easy and just realize what the real situation is." Now, that is the unforgivable sin in intelligence analysis. You never suppress things. You never cook things to the recipe of high policy. And that's precisely what was done here and repeatedly, as is revealed in this very extensive and very meticulously done, I might add, Senate report.
And finally, the curveball story is told in the midst of media coverage that tells us there isn't any political pressure. For a reader to see that story and then see this conclusion that there wasn't any pressure, how do they resolve the two things in their minds?
Well, they have to realize that this is a political document, you know. They have to realize that I may not be completely right in the scenario that I just portrayed, but it seems to me that it's fairly clear that the Democrats agreed to let the Republicans say there wasn't any pressure in order to get the thing out. Now, Pat Roberts, I imagine, was threatening just to postpone publication of this thing till after the election. And so in return for him relenting on that, the Democrats said, "Okay, well, we'll agree unanimously that there wasn't any pressure." And then, of course, on the day that the thing was publicized, the Democrats get up and said there's all kinds of pressure. One of the people most involved in this, the ombudsman for the CIA, I worked with for 20 years. And he is the one who was quoted as saying that in his 32 years of service with the CIA, he had never seen such hammering, that was the word he used, such hammering on the analysts to come up with conclusions that the administrations wanted. So, you know, here you have that in the report, and you have a major finding that there was no pressure. People can see that there's been a little bit of, or maybe a lot of, disingenuousness here.
We've been speaking with Ray McGovern. He's a veteran CIA analyst and co-founder of the group Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Ray McGovern, thanks so much for joining us here on Counterspin.
You're most welcome.
In the new documentary, Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, filmmaker Robert Greenwald says Fox News Channel favors conservatives, Republicans, and the Bush White House. The film, produced with help from the groups Center for American Progress and MoveOn.org, had its debut in New York City on July 13th and will be shown at more than 3,000 MoveOn-organized house parties across the country on July 18th. Outfox producer Robert Greenwald joins us now from Los Angeles. Am I right?
You are right.
Thanks. Welcome to Counterspin, Robert Greenwald.
It's good to be here.
Well, I'd like to note before we get started that two FAIR staffers, myself and co-host Peter Hart, appear in the film, as does FAIR founder Jeff Cohen. FAIR also produced a study that's featured in this film. Whew. After I've said all that, Robert, why did you make this film?
I made the film because as I was finishing up a theatrical version of Uncovered, the movie I did about the war, I developed a section for that about the role of the media. And I think looking back on it, the role of the media in the war is going to turn out to be one of the most tragic and fatal, if you will, flaws in our system and our democracy. I mean, you guys know this all too well. The debate we heard was whether you should bomb them from the air or come in from the land. And that was the perspective we were given on the primary news media. So in poking around, I got further intrigued about why that was. And many good journalists, editors, writers, producers kept mentioning to me, not that they would deny their own organization's culpability here, but they talked about Foxification or the Fox effect and how Fox was pulling their news organizations in two very troubling ways. One, the pseudo-patriotism, which included everything from
the cheerleading for the war to trying to silence critics of the war. But the other part of Fox News, maybe less well known, is the cheapening of news. It's a whole lot easier and costs a whole lot less to have two people in a room screaming at each other than to have real news and real journalism. So those two elements came together and led me in the direction of doing this film. And of course, I must say, a fair, not only are you guys in the movie, but the work you've done on Fox over the years was a significant frame and input for me that I was very aware of.
Well, that was why you made the movie. Now tell us a little bit about how you made the movie.
How I made the movie was a couple of interesting elements. One is I had 10 volunteers around the country who monitored Fox between them almost 24 hours a day. They had a list of 10 things to look for. When they saw it, they would send me an email. We would collate the emails, and I'd set up an elaborate taping system so that someone would say, Monday, 4 o'clock, O'Reilly did X, Y, Z. We would pull that clip, put it into the editing bay, and then I would work with the editors. Because I felt from the beginning the way to tell the Fox News story was with Fox News. That was one key element. The other key element was through a lot of hard work and help of good friends, been able to get 9 former Fox News employees to come forward and speak about what actually goes on there. And in an effort to keep this really objective, unlike Fox News, as you well know, we commissioned the study that FAIR did, which was an enormous help in proving concretely the bias of Fox News.
That study showed that on Fox's signature news show, Special Report with Brit Hume, guests in a special one-on-one segment on the show ran 5-1 Republicans over Democrats and more than 5-1 conservatives over progressives. Well, editorially, Robert Greenwald, you used a sort of multilateral approach to make your point. You used critics, you used whistleblowers, former Fox employees, as you mentioned, and more. Tell us about that approach.
Well, I felt that I wanted to come at it from a series of different angles. I wanted to use the clips to show the story. I didn't know I'd be as successful as it turned out we were in getting former Fox News people. And I wanted to highlight some of the really terrific folks who have been working in this field for years and years. And by the way, if people go to either your website or our website, which is outfox.org, we have a whole activist guide as part of it, because the movie will be a failure if people only look at it and get angry. It will be successful if we recruit lots of new people who understand, as McChesney says in a movie, we're never going to have the kind of society we want. We're never going to have a society of social justice until we deal with the media, because that's a serious impediment to getting to where we need to be.
Well, you also used memos. These are memos, internal memos from Fox that were handed down from on high, and as well as many clips. Tell us about the memos, and then tell us about your approach to the clips. Why would Fox News allow you to use such clips?
Well, starting with the memos, we had all heard about these memos. People sort of knew about them. One former Fox guy had gone public a while ago. And through the help of many good folks within Fox News, I was able to get a bunch of these memos. And we decided we were going to use them in the movie. And some of them are available on different websites now. And it's the first time I think people have been able to see absolutely, you know, Moody says X and you do Y. And it's really quite outrageous that he's telling the Fox reporters what to see, how to see it, and how to talk about it. I think, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we should try to campaign to free the Fox News reporters.
You feature a former CIA analyst and a Republican in the show describing the memo system there as Stalinist. It's quite amazing.
Yes, it really is. And with the clips, I decided that there was no way Fox News was going to give me permission. In fact, I say two words, which is Al Franken, knowing how litigious they are in an effort to silence all different voices. So we set this system up, we started taping the memos, and we decided we were going to go ahead, that it was in my legal right, fair use right, to go ahead and use these clips, because in fact it's the only way to tell the story of Fox News. You can't tell it by just, at least what I wanted to do, just writing about it and saying, you know, here Bill O'Reilly raised his voice, and you know, here so-and-so did this way. You just look at it, and it is, I think, in total, quite devastating, the cumulative effect of seeing all of these clips and how Fox News conspires to get, I mean, when have you ever had a channel get work consistently to have one person elected and another person defeated? And that's what we're seeing. As I say, I don't even mind that they have a bias, but just say, you know, we're Republican and proud. Mm-hmm. We're the great right-wing network. Don't call it a news channel. Call it an opinion channel.
Well, your film Outfoxed has a strong point of view, so it's no surprise that it's come under fire. Fox's own reporter assigned to cover the film, Eric Shawn, has called the film unfair, slanted, and a hit job, though he admits he hasn't seen it. On Fox's special report on July 13th, Shawn faulted you for not interviewing Fox officials for the film. What do you say to these critics?
I didn't ask Fox because two reasons. One is I knew that they would try to shut me down. And number two, they're on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We know what Fox News thinks. They're in the movie. I have clips telling us what they think. But to get into a debate with Fox News, I hardly have to feel sorry for them. They got a pretty loud microphone, and the fact that this one little film has been able to raise such hell for them is actually quite surprising and exciting, but I don't worry about Fox being able to have their voice heard. As is always the case, by the way, with Fox News, they rarely ever go to the substance. Nobody has talked about the FAIR study and denied it. Nobody has said anything about the number of incidents that the ex-Fox News people report about.
Not even to mention that the film has leading Fox correspondent Carl Cameron admitting on tape that his wife was campaigning for George Bush in 2000 while he was covering the Bush campaign. Incidents like that really speak for themselves. We've been speaking with OutFox producer Robert Greenwald. If you're listening to this show before Sunday, July 18th, you can visit outfox.org and find out the location of an outfoxed house party near you. Robert Greenwald, thanks for joining us today on Counterspin.
My pleasure.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the staff and interns at the Media Watch Group FAIR, based in New York. FAIR also publishes a bimonthly magazine called Extra. For subscription information, you can call the following toll-free number, 1-800-847-3993. That's 1-800-847-3993. Be sure to tell them you heard about Extra here on Counterspin. If you missed part of today's show or would like to hear other Counterspin broadcasts, you can do that at FAIR's website at www.fair.org. This show was engineered by Kelly Spivey at Mercer Media and co-hosted by Peter Hart and myself, Steve Rendell. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.